Welcome to the Full of Money audio commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording on Friday, the 23rd of February at 6:30 Greenwich Mean Time. Well, this has been an exciting week. This being Friday, it's the big picture long-term audio, but I'll start off by summarizing what's happened today and in the last week, and then we'll move on to our more longer-term themes. I'll try not to indulge myself and keep this one reasonably within reasonable time constraints, because I think the last one I recorded went out to about half an hour. Anyway, enough of that. Looking at stock markets to start off with, Asia was really quite strong in here today, and it has been strong all week. The Nikkei was up 80 points. It's at 18,188. This is an important breakout from a psychological level. The fact that it actually rallied today, given that Wall Street closed marginally down yesterday, is really quite bullish. And I think that investors are really starting to look back at this market, while a number of other developed markets and indeed emerging markets are looking a little bit overextended here. Japan has only just broken out of a consolidation, so it's looking quite positive. Of course, I'm talking my book here, but I definitely maintain that it is looking positive. Across Europe, it was a relatively steady day. The only one that was down was the IBEX, down 24 points. That's 14,677. That's coming dangerously close to my stop. But it's a very small position, so I'm quite happy to leave that where it is. Looking at some of the other European markets, the FTSE was up 20, it's 6,401. And with the resources sector in form, it wouldn't be at all surprising to see the FTSE do a bit better here. Across the boards, really, there wasn't anything up more than about a quarter of 1%, so a relatively steady day in here for Europe. It has been leading the way lower over the last couple of days, but steadied up in here today. Again, these are sort of ranging uptrends, still consistent, but well, I suppose not very sexy. They're not going up very quickly. Looking at the U.S. markets right now, the Dow is down 40, the S&P is down 5, and the Nasdaq's down nearly 10. So a little bit of weakness in here. You had them rally off their lows later in the session yesterday, and it'll be interesting to see where they close today. There's been a lot of news coming out, particularly in the home building sector and in the subprime lending markets. And I think people are a bit nervous. I think it was very interesting last night. I was watching Bloomberg just after the close, and the presenter, I think in about 5 minutes, she used this statement. I'll repeat it in a second. I think three or four times at least. And her statement was, "Is this the beginning of the correction which so many people have been looking for?" Now, personally, I think that's really quite bullish. People are looking at the subprime lending market and they're thinking that every bank is going to go bust or that they've written so many bad loans. But I don't think that it's going to be nearly as big a disaster as people are predicting. And the stock markets are generally quite steady, down 6 or down 5 and a bit on the S&P right now is really not an awful lot to worry about. Now, it has been down the last couple of days, but it's still within that sort of ranging gradual uptrend. And I think it's very hard to panic about it right now. Now, that's just sort of the short view on stock markets. Looking at the bond markets, because bond markets are really are quite firm in here. The long bond, the 30-year, is up 20 points at 111.22, and the 10-year is up 12 at 107.23. But you've got three higher lows on that 30-year bond, so it's definitely found support, and it's rallying from here, and it's relatively consistent. Well, with lower yields implied in that higher price, that's not a headwind for stock markets, so that's not going to be any great worry. And looking at the gilts and the bunds, they've also found some support here, so they're relatively steady in here today. The gilt is up 31 points, 106.93, and the Eurobund is up 38 points at 115.47. So, really quite steady in here. So, they're not providing the type of headwind that should really worry markets. Now, that said, there is of course the commodity complex, and this has been really very strong this week. This week we've seen breakouts on a number of the industrial metals, and you'll see those weekly charts that I posted in comment of the day today, and I think those are very, very important because when you look at that weekly chart, you can see that a number of them, particularly things like tin, had been consolidating for a long time, and this is a breakout from a quite significant trading range. Another one is lead. It's just recently broken out from a consolidation that's been over the last 3 or 4 months. And that is also looking very positive. Nickel is up over 2,000 points today. It's at 40,950, so nearly at 41,000. This is an emphatic breakout and a reassertion of this uptrend. Now, a level 41,000 is almost eye-watering, it's so high, but that is from our perspective, where we've seen these things not so long ago down at 10 and 15,000. And I remember looking at these back then, and I never imagined that they were going to go this high. But looking at the scope for this secular bull market and the fact that we're still in the sort of early to middle stages of this market, these can still go up an awful lot more. So, as opposed to allowing ourselves to become constrained by our perceptions of where these might go, we need to maintain our longer term view, keep an eye on the longer term charts, and watch the consistency of the uptrends because they're very, very big uptrends. But that's the industrial metals, and they've gone up quite a lot. Copper is up 730 in here today, it's at 285. Zinc is up 129, and lead is up 40, so really quite positive in here. Aluminium also had really quite a good day. But that is a bit of a headwind because there is inflationary pressure in those higher industrial metal prices. You also have foodstuffs starting to push up. Cotton is up in here today. The grains are down a bit, but they have been very positive over the week. Soybeans is at 7.96. Again, the grains are at an area which is quite a few of them are at areas which is not particularly surprising that they find a little bit of resistance. Soybeans near 800, corn near 450, wheat I think it's near 400. I haven't got that right in front of me. But the big one is oil. Oil is at $61 right now. It's up 7 cents. It has been as high as 61.80, and there's going to be a lot of people looking at this oil price. Not so much the fact that it's gone back up to 60, because 60 wasn't too much of a headwind before, but I think it's the speed at which it's been moving has unnerved investors to a certain extent, because not so long ago it was down at 50 or 55, and people were writing this off. Now people are starting to have, or investors are starting to have to reappraise the oil market, and it does look like it's primed to move higher. And the higher it goes, the greater the headwind you're going to see for stock markets. So bonds are not really a problem, but the oil price is an increasing headwind. Looking at the precious metals, well, gold had a fantastic week in here today. Oh, sorry, in here today, it had a fantastic week. It's up 580 as we speak. It's at 683 and 25 cents. But given that it had one day this week, it rallied over $20. So that was an emphatic breakout. I'm just going to pull the chart up from that just to remind me of where the levels were. But when it rallied off that just below 660, it had sort of, well, the day before I got stopped out, well, I stopped myself out. I was a bit nervous in that market. And I was out of the office the next day for much of the day. And when I came back in later on to complete, posting fuller money, I saw that it was up so much and I was practically crying. As Warren Buffett said, I really should have gone to the bar the day before. But as David says, you allow yourselves 5 minutes of pity and then you move on. But the important thing was that that was an emphatic breakout, and that really does show us that there's a lot of support in the market here, that there is definitely people buying at these levels. So it does look like gold is moving into new higher territory. And the same can be said for silver. Silver is currently up 34 cents, that's at 14.59, very, very strong. And it is emphatically broken above that $14 level. I wouldn't be at all surprised if we see a test of the all-time, of the recent highs or last year's highs in the next couple of weeks. and possibly even sooner if it maintains the current form. So precious metals are certainly the in-form sector, and that fits very much in with our longer term themes. Looking at the currency markets, they've been relatively steady this week, but the dollar is giving up some of its gains in here right now. The euro is up half 1 cent. Swiss franc is down, having sorry, the Swiss franc is up. The dollar is down against the Swiss franc, having tested support around 124, and the British pound is rallying as well. So we are seeing some further weakness in the US dollar. That never really looked like it was going to go right back up towards the highs that we saw late last year. But that's pretty much it for what we've been seeing recently. Now, moving on to the longer term themes, let's go back to stock markets. And we've been saying now for the last 4 or 5 years that Wall Street is in a secular bull market, sorry, in a secular bear market. And we define that as a generational long period of PE ratio contraction and rising dividend yields. Now, you might say, why can we say that it's a bear market when the Dow is making new highs? Now, the difference between the bear market we're seeing now in Wall Street and the one that we saw after the peak in 1989 in Japan is liquidity. Right now, the world is absolutely awash with liquidity. And the growth in M3 in the various central banks around the world is quite unprecedented. I think it's over 8 to 9% in the ECB, where they have economic growth of about 2%. So 400 times more money being pumped into the system than is justified by the amount of economic growth in GDP figures. So with that amount of liquidity, that flows into every facet of the financial system, and the US markets have certainly been able to rally significantly since the highs that they had seen in 1999, 2000. But what this also means is that while the US markets are well able to make new highs, they're not going to be the leading equity markets around the world. We've seen that Europe over the last 3 or 4 years has significantly outperformed the US, both in nominal terms and then if you currency adjust it. Also, with Japan, and you compare that with the US, well, Japan has completed its bear market. The peak was in 1989, we're now in 2007. It's recently broken out of a 1 year consolidation. Prior to that, it had done very well in 2005, and it had probably bottomed in 2003. Well, if you look at the charts, it certainly bottomed in 2003. So that is probably a much less risky bet than going hell for leather into US stock markets. However, just because the US is in a secular bear market does not mean it doesn't have an influence on all the other markets. The vast majority of the money in the world is in dollars, and that's how it's invested. So the liquidity situation in the US has a dramatic impact on the way other markets perform. We refer to that as the Wall Street leash effect, when, and by leash we mean like a retractable dog leash. When liquidity is abundant and the US markets or Wall Street is in an uptrend or at least going sideways, that leaves out the reins or leaves out the leash and allows other markets to progress on the upside. We see that across lots of different asset classes. And particularly in those markets which have a good fundamental story, you'll see them perform really very, very well. And we've seen that across the boards. You see that the Middle Eastern markets did very well last year, then the investor sentiment went against them, but you now see that in the Eastern European markets. There is an increasing amount of interest in Africa, but in a lot of other smaller markets, for example, in Vietnam, you're seeing a lot of money chasing the fundamental stories. And one of the things that this flood of liquidity is doing is it's compressing the spread between BBB and AAA bonds, so it makes risk much cheaper. And that means that Obviously, that's not going to go on forever, this compression of risk. But as long as it does, we can expect markets to do really very well. But that is why we always keep a very close eye on the US markets or the US stock markets, because if we see those starting to turn down in an aggressive way, that will automatically pull liquidity back towards those markets and a lot of the emerging markets, which really would have looked very good, could easily be left high and dry. Now, our favorite stock market for the very long term is India. Obviously, it's an emerging market and highly correlated to Wall Street. When Wall Street goes into a correction, you're much more likely to have a much bigger correction in India. But the chances are that it will bottom sooner and will progress back towards its highs much quicker than Wall Street would. So the overall effect is that you have much greater percentage gains in a market like India than you would have in Wall Street. Now, one of the other main topics that we look at also involves India, because supply and elasticity meets rising demand is a major theme that Fuller Money has been expounding for the last 3 or 4 years. With 5.5 to 6 billion people living in the emerging markets, 1 billion of them in India, or more than 1 billion in India, more than 1 billion in China, and eventually emerging markets do emerge, and per capita consumption of raw materials also increases. Now, as that number starts to approximate even a fraction of what we consume in the Western world, then the long-term demand profile for most industrial commodities is going to continue to rise. And because these are metals, particularly, which have been in secular bear markets for really quite a long time, since the late 70s, we can see and we have seen very impressive gains. And we don't believe this is going to end anytime soon. The secular bull market in commodities could last for upwards of a decade and possibly even longer. What influences the demand side doesn't really have an impact on the supply side, because supply had been constrained for such a long time because of the length of the bear market. In a bear market, people tend to mine the easiest supplies that they've got, or they tend not to explore too much because they just don't have the money for it. They tend to slim down, and it is really only the people who hedge aggressively tend to survive. It takes a long time to retool, and it takes a long time to discover. And particularly now with the environmental issues, it takes a long time to bring a new greenfield site to market. So while there are billions being invested in bringing new supplies to the market, it takes time. And of course, as prices go up, you have labor problems and indeed labor shortages. So the supply side is rather constrained. So we say supply elasticity meets rising demand. The growing middle classes that we have in places like China and India and across Asia, and indeed parts of the Middle East, where we have giant numbers of young people beginning to enter the workforce and beginning to have families of their own, this has created an incredible building boom and probably the biggest urbanization in history. Building homes, building roads and infrastructure requires an incredible amount of raw material. So the demand side, the rising demand, is something that will go on for a significant amount of time. When you listen to the plans that China and India have for expanding their cities, these are not aims that will be fulfilled in the next 2 or 3 years. They're plans that they have for the next couple of decades. So they're very serious about increasing the living standards and the availability of infrastructure to their populations. While the markets are fickle, and over the last 6 or 7 months, there have been a great number of people trumpeting that we are at the end of the secular bull market, or the, well, they didn't call it secular, they call it cyclical bull market in commodities. I don't think they were looking at the charts. I don't think the charts ever looked like the bull market was over. And people tend to mix up consolidations for complete reversals, and I think that was really quite well, that was quite a folly. Now, oil is a highly emotive subject, and it's currently at 61.35, so it's rallied quite a bit since I started recording this audio. But important factor here is that with that enormous number of people all aspiring to the West standards of living that we enjoy in the Western world, well, the number of cars per capita is increasing dramatically. People want air conditioning and heating, and all of the things, the modern conveniences that we take for granted. So we can expect the demand for oil to continue to rise. And unlike the metals, oil cannot be recycled. So once it's burnt, it's gone. And I think that we can expect the demand profile to outstrip the supply of new reserves to the market for the considerable future. We've just been through an enormous correction, and that has done some pretty serious damage to the integrity of the uptrend. But that is no reason to say that we have entered a new phase or that this secular bull market is over. I think that we're still really only in the early stages of it. And as long as oil holds above the recent lows, which were around $50, I think we can give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. It might take some time to get back up towards those highs, but it most certainly will get back there. I would be absolutely amazed if this really were the end for the oil complex. Now, moving on towards some of the other commodities, because the grain complex has been really in form recently, and particularly for corn, this is the first time that demand has been the motivating factor for this market. Because previously it was generally supply. You would have a crop failure, you would have drought or flooding, and that would impact the crop yields. But right now you have the demand side having a major impact because they're demanding more corn ethanol to put into into gasoline. In the US, this is putting a significant demand on the near term on on the crops, not just now, but into the future. That means that these could go significantly higher. And of course, with soybeans, you have the speculation that because people are growing more corn, they'll cut back on growing soybeans. So you'll have less of that in this year and into next year. But they're still very much in form. And because you have just a general amount of demand for commodities, you are starting to see more of the soft commodities turning into uptrends. Cotton in particular is pretty much towards the bottom of the range now, and that range has lasted for the last 2 or 3 years, and it's turned into backwardation. So it's cheap and it's in demand. That could rally rather significantly. Personally, I haven't taken a position in it myself because I'm going to be out for the next week. I'll talk about that later. But you look at coffee, or you look at orange juice. These are starting to move, or orange juice has moved quite a lot already, and coffee is looking very much more positive. Now, looking at the currency markets, no country wants a strong currency because of the competitive forces of globalization. And they're competing with each other to hold the value of their currencies lower. And that is why you have so much liquidity being created by the central banks, because they need to devalue their currencies in a stealth fashion to make sure that the consolidated earnings of their exporters don't go down. So that means that you're not going to have very big trends in the reserve currencies like the yen, the euro, the Swiss franc, the pound, and the dollar. Now, they're going to move in sort of short to medium term moves, but you're not going to see huge moves on the secular bull theme that we've seen, for example, in the metals or in the energy sector. And that's purely because no country wants a strong currency. Those countries that can afford to have a strong currency are places like Singapore. And indeed, as long as China continues on its path to revaluing the renminbi, that was going to take pressure off of those other markets in Asia which compete with China, which allows those other currencies to strengthen, and the Singapore dollar is one of those. When we look at Thailand, and I think an important thing was that the I think it was the finance minister for Thailand was on CNBC recently, and he paid, I suppose, small heed to the currency controls, or the capital controls that they introduced about a month ago, but then he made a long point about how many investment opportunities there were in Thailand. And I think that's really quite important, because when the government wants a stronger stock market, then they usually get it because they're willing to do whatever it takes. We certainly saw that in China only recently towards the bottom, and I think everyone in the world at this stage knows how much the Chinese markets have gone up. But going back to currencies, those capital controls in Thailand have not succeeded in weakening the Thai baht. And Asian currencies in general are strengthening, and I think there's a large degree there is because the Chinese renminbi is also strengthening, and a lot of these currencies trade with that in mind. Now, the last thing is that I'm going to be out for the next week, and that is because my family and I are moving back to Ireland. Now, there's a number of reasons that we're doing that. I suppose chief among them is that we don't really want our daughter to grow up in central London, where we're living quite na right now. And I'm rather an outdoorsy type, and I miss being able to take out a scull on the lake in the mornings. And but primarily, it's also because I hate commuting, and it takes me an hour to get here right now, so that's more than 2 hours a day. And working from home, I can devote more of my time to writing and recording for you. But we sincerely hope, and I'm pretty positive that you're not going to notice any difference in the level of service that you receive from us. And that's pretty much it for me. But thank you very much for your time.